Cripple Horse complained. "It is not easy to travel when my stomach is so empty. It growled all night while we walked." "You do not eat," Walking Man said to Grey Wolf. "I am not hungry," Grey Wolf spat. "I cannot think of eating when that white devil is still alive. I will eat again when I cut his heart out of his body." Walking Man and Cripple Horse exchanged worried glances. "You must eat to keep your body strong," Walking Man said. "We might never cross paths with the white man again." "I will cross his path again," Grey Wolf stated firmly. "Until I do, you eat the rabbit." He tossed the rabbit leg on the ground between them, then turned over on his side to sleep. Walking Man picked up the rabbit leg, brushed the dirt off, took a healthy bite of it, then handed it to Cripple Horse. Cripple Horse looked at Grey Wolf as he lay there with his back to them. Then he looked up at Walking Man and slowly shook his head. "We should sleep a little while before we start walking again," he said. They were sure they had covered two-thirds of the distance between Lodgepole Creek and the North Platte River during the night, and if they were correct in their figuring, they would strike the river before noon that day. The last time they were there, they were lucky. They found some antelope. Maybe they would be lucky again. With that to hope for, they lay down and went to sleep. "Wake up," Cripple Horse said, and shook Walking Man on the shoulder. "What is it?" Walking Man asked. "Grey Wolf," Cripple Horse answered. "He is not here." Walking Man sat up and looked all around him, and saw no trace of Grey Wolf, but he was not concerned. "He has gone to relieve himself," he decided, even though there were no bushes of any size near the tiny stream they had stopped by. He could think of no other explanation. "The white devil has made him crazy," Cripple Horse insisted. "While we slept, he went back to kill the white man." Walking Man was reluctant to believe that, and said as much. So Cripple Horse walked a dozen yards back the way they had come the night just past. He studied the ground until he found Grey Wolf's tracks, heading back south. "See," he cried, "the tracks do not lie. He said he would find him. He has gone back." "We must hurry and catch him," Walking Man exclaimed. "He will be shot." Cripple Horse did not share in his friend's anxiety for Grey Wolf. "I will not go back to try to stop him," he stated firmly. "One man cannot tell another man what he must do. Grey Wolf's mind has gone. We have told him what we think, and still he is determined to find the white man. He will be killed. I will go on to the Big River. You must decide what you must do." Walking Man thought about what Cripple Horse said. He could not deny the truth in his friend's words. After a few moments, he said, "Maybe you are right. We have done our best to save him from killing himself. There is no reason for us to commit suicide with him." Chapter 8 The morning passed without incident as they followed the common road to Cheyenne. When Pearlie deemed it time for a rest, he picked a spot beside the creek where there were plenty of trees before he stopped for breakfast. By this time they had traveled together enough to have settled into a routine for making camp, so there was little time wasted in gathering wood, starting a fire, and preparing breakfast, while Pearlie took care of the horses. "I sure will be glad to eat something besides sow belly and pan biscuits," Stella commented as she tended the meat in the pan. "At least we got a couple of oven-baked biscuits at Duck Bend," Liz said. "I don't think old Temple's wife was too tickled to give 'em to the likes of us." She chuckled when she pictured the tiny woman. "Took an engine raid to do it," Stella said, and joined her in laughing. She was distracted when her gaze lit on Pearlie stroking Buck's face. "Look at old Pearlie down by the creek. He talks more to that horse than he talks to us." She looked at Liz and grinned. "We're running out of time on our bet. Ain't but one more night before we get to Cheyenne, if he's right about the distance." "Uh-huh," Liz replied. "Getting a little worried about paying me that dollar, aren't you?" "Shoot, no," Stella insisted. "Mark my words. He's got to be thinking about tonight being his last chance. He'll come calling. You just get that dollar ready to hand over." Pearlie was the topic of their conversation for a while then. It occurred to them how little they knew about him, for he never volunteered any information about himself. They knew that he worked cattle, and that was only because Liz had sat down at the table with him and his two brothers in the saloon in Ogallala. Other than that, they knew he had come this way in hopes of finding his grandpa, who was the reason for his peculiar name. It was easy to see that he was bashful and shy around women. "You reckon he's as green as those temple boys when it comes to women?" Liz wondered. "I wouldn't be surprised," Stella said. "I'd like to be the one to break him in. Be more fun than those boys last night." Unaware that he was being discussed, Pearlie looked up toward the campfire when the aroma of boiling coffee reached his nostrils. A fresh, hot cup of it was the only temptation he had on his mind, so he gave Buck a final pat on his face and walked up to the fire to join his traveling companions. "Just about ready," Liz greeted him. "Set yourself down. Stella, pour the man a cup of coffee." "Here you go, Pearlie," Stella said, handing him a cup. "Got your own cup. Don't have to wait for me or Liz to finish with one." "Reckon not," Pearlie said. "Thank you." He took the cup, wondering why both women had such silly grins on their faces. If he didn't know for a fact that there was none with them, he might have suspected they had gotten hold of some whiskey. They relaxed under the trees until Pearlie figured the horses were ready to go again. Then they were back on track, with Pearlie leading and the women riding side by side behind him. When the afternoon grew long and the sun began to sink lower on the horizon, Stella rode up beside him. "How much longer do you figure we'll be riding before we camp for the night?" "We can stop any time now, I reckon, if your women are getting tired. I haven't seen a real good spot in the last couple of miles. Not many trees." "That's a fact," she said. "Let's keep going till we find one, 'cause this is the last night we'll be camping together. Tomorrow our trip will be over, so tonight's spot ought to be a good one." "Oh," he replied. "Well, I reckon you're right. We'll try to find us a good one. I don't want to push the horses too far anyway." He had planned to travel farther that day to get a little closer to Cheyenne, but if they wanted to stop early, he'd go along with it. "Dumb as a stump," Stella said to Liz when she dropped back beside her again. "I told you," Liz said. "Having a roll in the hay with a woman doesn't ever cross his mind."
"That ain't normal," Stella insisted.
"There's something mighty wrong with him." She paused, then added, "Or with us." "I expect it's with us," Liz said, "and I reckon I don't blame him." "We'll see," Stella said. "The night ain't over yet." They traveled on for close to 2 miles before reaching a stretch where another stream flowed into Lodgepole Creek, creating a fairly thick border of trees and bushes with grass for the horses as well. Pearlie pointed Buck's head toward the middle of it, rode up to the edge of the creek, and stopped. "Won't find a spot much better than this," he announced, and stepped down from the saddle. The women went to work right away on the nightly routine while Pearlie tended the horses. As he had before, he hobbled all the horses but Buck to ensure they stayed close in case of horse thieves. The 3 Sioux hostiles who had been following them were no longer seen as a threat so close to Cheyenne, but there was no sense in getting careless. When Pearlie returned to the fire, he was carrying an armload of wood to help the women out. When he dropped it on the ground nearby, Stella said, "Thank you, kind sir. For that, you get a cup of fresh, hot coffee." She poured him a cup. "Anything else we can do special for you, for escorting me and Liz all the way to Cheyenne?"
"Reckon not," Pearlie said. "Biscuit seems special enough."
He glanced at Liz when she seemed to find that humorous. He had to admit that he might have felt like celebrating this last night, for it meant that he could soon deliver them to Cheyenne safely, and then he would be free to head for Colorado territory to look for his grandpa. But there was something that had to be taken care of before he would feel like any celebration. Maybe, he thought, the biscuits might help soften the sharp pains he had been experiencing in his gut all afternoon in the saddle. Suspect to him was the slab of bacon he had brought from Ogallala, thinking it might have become rancid. He hadn't said anything about it to the women, since they hadn't complained, but he felt a definite storm building in his bowels, and he was afraid it was going to have to be dealt with pretty soon. Thankful for the fading light as the sun finally sank below the horizon, he felt he could rid his system of its burden. "I need to take another look at the horses," he announced, set his cup down, and walked quickly toward the horses, drinking at the edge of the creek. "Don't be too long," Stella called after him. "My biscuits are going to be ready pretty quick." Without turning around, he acknowledged her with a simple wave of his arm. When he got to the horses, he kept walking and headed toward a row of thick laurel bushes. As he anticipated, his relief came immediately. Thankfully, there were plenty of leaves to serve his purpose. Feeling he was comfortable enough to enjoy Stella's biscuits then, he returned to the camp. "Anything worrying you about the horses?" Stella asked.
"No, not a thing," he answered quickly. Embarrassed to think she might have suspected the real purpose for his sudden concern for the horses. "I just wanted to make sure they were all right."
Stella's biscuits were as good as she had boasted. Even the bacon tasted different to him than that they had cooked for breakfast. He supposed just that one slab had been rancid, and the rest was all right. Whatever the reason, he felt no distress after finishing his supper. They sat by the fire and finished the coffee. Then the women cleaned up the utensils.
"Anything else we can do for you, Pearlie?" Stella asked.
"No, ma'am, I reckon not," he replied. "I'm ready to get some sleep. We've got a little bit farther to go than I figured, so we'll get an early start." That said, he retired to his bedroll several yards from theirs, as was his custom.
"Well, if that ain't something," Stella remarked to Liz. "I was sure he'd be wanting a ride tonight. What the hell's wrong with him?"
"Like I told you," Liz said, while she climbed into her blankets by the fire. "He ain't likely to think about being with a woman unless he sees one in church or somewhere and he thinks he wants to marry her."
"Dumb as a fence post," Stella said as she crawled under her blanket. "I'll be damn glad to get to Cheyenne tomorrow."
All was peaceful until late in the early hours of the morning, when Pearlie was awakened by the same evil that had cramped his bowels earlier. He lay there grimacing for a long while, hoping the demon would settle down and let him go back to sleep. When it became apparent that wasn't going to happen, Pearlie folded his blanket back and carefully got to his feet, pausing only for a quick look toward the women. When it appeared they were both sleeping, he grabbed his rifle and hurried to the bushes near the creek again. Thinking she had heard a noise, Stella opened her eyes and listened. She then turned to look toward Pearlie's bedroll, in time to see him heading into the bushes. She turned back on her side to go back to sleep, but started thinking about the shy young man who felt it necessary to hide deep in the bushes just to pee. A wicked grin formed upon her face as a mischievous thought occurred to her. Being as quiet as she possibly could, she got up from her blanket and tiptoed away from the fire, which was now little more than glowing coals.
Satisfied that Liz was fast asleep, she hurried toward the creek bank after Pearlie. Behind her, Liz raised her head, having awakened as well. A wicked grin, matching the one on Stella's face, parted her lips, and she thought, "She sure as hell hates to lose that dollar." Then she lay her head down and went back to sleep. Behind a large laurel bush, with his back toward a cottonwood tree, Pearlie did his business. On the other side of the bushes he heard Buck whinny, and was immediately concerned that one of the women was up. Fearing she might stumble into the same spot he had picked, he hurriedly grabbed his pants and pulled them up, with no time to button the flap on his underwear. Before he could button his trousers, he heard her call out playfully. "Pearlie," she said, "I know you're here." Her voice seemed to come from only a few yards away from him. There was no time to button his trousers. He dropped to the ground, hoping she had not seen him, at the same time hearing the thud of the arrow when it struck the trunk of the cottonwood. Not sure what he had heard until he looked behind him and saw the arrow sticking in the tree. He reacted then the only way he could. Grabbing his rifle, he rolled over and over on the ground, trying to spot his assailant. At the same time, he was concerned for the woman who had called out his name, but it was so dark there among the trees he couldn't determine where anybody was. And then it came again. "What's the matter, Pearlie?" she called. "Are you bashful?" Recognizing the voice as Stella's, he yelled, "Stella, hide!" As soon as he spoke, another arrow came whistling his way to disappear harmlessly into the thick branches of the laurel. Holding his trousers up with one hand and his rifle in the other, Pearlie moved quickly to another tree. He crouched behind it, still trying to locate his attacker, reasonably certain that he was only one man. He almost groaned aloud when he heard Stella call out again. "You want me to hide?" she teased. "All right. I'll play your little game, but don't be too long." "Stella, damn it! Shut up and hide! There's an Indian in the bushes with us." Still convinced he was playing a little game with her, she grinned and started to reply. Before she could speak, she felt her head jerked violently back and the cold knife blade against her neck. In the next instant, she felt the bite of the blade and knew she was about to die. She dropped to the ground, never hearing the sound of the Winchester or the cry of death before Grey Wolf fell beside her. It was only a matter of seconds before Stella blinked her eyes open, and the image she saw was that of Pearlie pulling up his pants and buttoning them. Confused at first, she was aware of a stinging sensation on the side of her neck, and she suddenly remembered what had happened just before she fainted. Her hand went immediately to the cut on her neck, and she gasped when she came away with blood on her fingers. "It ain't bad," Pearlie assured her. "But it would have been. He started to cut your throat, but I saw him just in time. The cut ain't no longer than an inch or so, and it ain't deep. We'll have to clean it up and put some grease or something on it. Like I said, he just started to cut your throat. He didn't have time to finish." "I swear, I thought it was you that grabbed me. Where did he come from?" Stella asked as he buckled his belt. "And why are your pants down?" "I suspect he was one of those three Indians that have been trailing us all along." He answered her first question and ignored the second, thinking she would be able to figure that out. "I don't know why he was by himself." Then it occurred to him, where was Liz? At once concerned for her safety, he said, "Come on, we've got to see if Liz is all right." He helped Stella to her feet, and they ran back to the camp, where they found Liz hunkered down behind her saddle, her Colt 44 in her hand. When Stella saw her, she immediately wanted an explanation. "What the hell were you doing back here when we were in the bushes with that wild Indian? Why didn't you come to help us? That damn Indian almost cut my throat." Liz took a minute to holster her pistol and get on her feet. I got ready to shoot the first son of a bitch that came after me once I heard the shot. I didn't see any use jumping in the bushes, just because you two were running around in the dark. I might have got killed.
Stella shuddered when she thought about how close she had come to dying.
If it hadn't been for you, I'd be dead right now, she said to Pearlie.
If you hadn't called me, I might be dead right now, Pearlie said, thinking of the arrow that struck the tree at about the same height as his belly would have been had he not dropped to the ground.
You kept calling out to me, but in the dark back there I couldn't see you, and I was trying to get you to be quiet and hide. And I reckon that's the only reason both the Indian and me found you. I had to shoot fast, else he was fixin' to open up your throat. I was afraid I might hit you instead of him. He shrugged. If I had to hit you, I reckon it would have beat getting your throat cut.
Well, I guess that's one way of looking at it, Stella replied sarcastically. But I guess I still owe you my life. Is there any way I can repay you?
Ha! Huh, Liz grunted. You don't ever give up, do you? Why don't you just go ahead and give me that dollar? Ain't nobody gonna do nothing for the rest of this night.
She drew her .44 and checked to make sure there was a round in every cylinder.
I know I ain't gonna sleep no more tonight. There were three of those Indians, and I ain't sure the other two ain't sneaking around this camp somewhere.
She holstered her pistol. Come on. I'll see if I can come up with something to bandage that cut on your neck.
I think I'll stay awake, Pearlie said. I don't know why, but I think that one came after us all by himself. He must have left his two friends, else we'd have had arrows flying all around us. It ain't gonna be that long till sunup anyway. Might as well bring this fire back to life.
As he had guessed, there was no further incident during the remaining hours of darkness. And when the early morning light began to dissolve the heavy shadows under the trees, he went back to the spot where Stella was attacked. The body of Grey Wolf was lying where it had fallen, the knife close beside it, and his bow a few feet away. Pearlie stood for a long moment, staring at the corpse of one who had come to kill him and the women. Hostile savage or not, he was a man, and Pearlie had taken his life. He had never killed anyone before, and the feeling of it was one he hoped he would never experience again. Being totally honest with himself, however, he could not say that he had had a choice. The Indian was in the process of slitting Stella's throat.
Well, Pearlie finally said, I hope that's the last we see of those three.
He then pushed a few yards farther through the bushes, and saw the arrow in the tree, and, after another look, realized that Stella had indeed saved his life when she caused him to drop to the ground. Walking up to stand before the tree, he found that the arrow was even with his chest. He went back to the previous site and knelt down to take a closer look at the body. The single round he had fired had struck the Indian in the side of his head. He tried to picture the shooting again, and realized that he was lucky he had not hit Stella. It was so dark, the angle was not the best, and there was very little margin for error. He shook his head as if to clear the picture. Then he thought of his brothers and the many shooting competitions they had had between the three of them, both hunting and target shooting. Pearlie always won. He didn't know why. He was just a better shot, with a rifle or handgun. His thoughts were interrupted when he had heard Liz calling him. He took another look at the body and wondered if he should bury it or not. It was only for a second before he decided, I'll leave it. No sense in cheating the wolves and the buzzards out of a meal. Me and Stella decided we're going to have breakfast this morning before we start out again. That all right with you? 'Cause if it ain't, we're wasting bacon that's already in the pan, and a full pot of fresh coffee.
Don't make no difference to me, he replied, if that's what you ladies want.
We figured the danger's about over, since you shot that engine last night, Stella said.
And if it ain't but about half a day's ride, there ain't no real hurry from here on in. And you've about starved us to death every day, waiting for the horses to get tired before we can eat breakfast," Liz informed him. "Oh," Pearlie muttered. "I reckon that's just a habit from driving cattle. Start 'em early, then stop at noon to let 'em eat." "So now we find out we're no better than cattle," Liz said. "What do you think about that, Stella?"
"I believe we've been insulted," Stella said.
"He don't think we're ladies at all. We ought not to let him eat with us."
He knew he was being teased. They were having a little fun at his expense, but he could still not help blushing. And the more he blushed, the more it encouraged them to keep it up. They were obviously feeling free of worry now that Cheyenne was so close. They kept it up for a little while longer before Liz said the bacon was going to burn black if she didn't take it off the fire. She served it up with some hardtack soaked in the grease, almost spilling Stella's when Stella placed a dollar in her hand. It caused them both to laugh, puzzling Pearlie. They were not as close to Cheyenne as Pearlie had figured. Still, they caught sight of the buildings of the bustling town in the late afternoon. Pearlie was surprised by the size of the town and the number of buildings more than two stories high. Especially impressive were the Union Pacific Railroad Depot and the magnificent Inter-Ocean Hotel, which they rode by on their way to the Cattleman's Saloon. The saloon was across the street from Dyer's Hotel, a two-story building with considerably less magnificence than the Inter-Ocean. According to Stella, who was bubbling with excitement to be back, the hotel was built by an Irishman named Timothy Dyer, and many of his customers frequented the Cattleman's. Pearlie was still tying the horses at the hitching rail in front of the saloon when Stella, with Liz in tow, hurried inside to announce her return. He paused to take a look around him at the many people on the street, and decided the town was too busy to suit him. "Good thing I ain't gonna be here that long," he thought, then gave Buck a pat on his neck and stepped up onto the boardwalk. Inside, the saloon was doing a brisk business for an afternoon, but he spotted Stella and Liz in an animated conversation with a short bald man sporting a black handlebar mustache. At about the same time, Stella spotted Pearlie and waved him over. "CJ," Stella said when he walked up, "this is Pearlie Gates. He's the man who brought Liz and me back from Ogallala. Pearlie, this is CJ Tubbs. He's the bartender here." CJ extended his hand while looking Pearlie up and down. "What was the name?" Never surprised by the question, Pearlie shook his hand and replied, "Pearlie Gates." He noticed Stella's expectant grin, but CJ made no comment about his name, prompting Stella to resume her conversation with the bartender. "Where's Ed?" she asked. "Is he in the office?" CJ said that he was. So Stella said that she was going to take Liz back there to meet him. "Pour Pearlie a drink on me. We'll be back in a minute." She didn't wait for Pearlie's response as she grabbed Liz by the hand and led her to a door behind the bar. "She's really something, ain't she?" CJ commented as he poured Pearlie's drink. "I'm glad to see her back here. I thought she'd gone for good. How about you? You fixing to stay in Cheyenne for a while?" "Nope," Pearlie answered.
"I expect I'll be heading out in the morning. All I agreed to do was bring Stella and Liz to Cheyenne. Then I'm heading south to Denver."
"Denver?" CJ replied.
"I'd have figured you'd be heading to Deadwood like most of the other strangers in town."
"Where's that?"
"Deadwood?" CJ replied, finding it hard to believe there was anyone who didn't know. "Up in the Black Hills where the gold strike is?" He kept staring at Pearlie then, expecting him to react. When he didn't, CJ went on to bring him up to date. "That's all most folks are talking about around here, going to the Black Hills to strike it rich. Folks are coming from Denver to head up that way, too. If I was as young as you, I'd most likely join 'em. A feller came through town a little while back, heading up there with a whole wagon train of people. Most of them was sportin' ladies. They've even set up a stagecoach line from Cheyenne to the Black Hills, the Deadwood Stage. He shook his head in wonder. I can't believe you didn't even know about it. I've been out of touch, Pearlie said. I came up from Texas with a herd of cattle. I only stayed in Ogallala one night, and nobody was talking about a gold rush, at least not where I was. After that, I was on that trail between there and here. CJ shrugged. Well, I expect you'll hear plenty about it now. Then, changing the subject abruptly, he asked, Is Pearlie Gates your real name? Pearlie had wondered when he was going to get around to that. He very patiently told CJ the story behind his name, which led to the reason he was going to Denver. So you're looking for your grandpa, huh? That's a fact, Pearlie replied. But I reckon I'll have to drop off two horses at the stable. They belong to Liz and Stella, so I guess that's what they'll want to do with them. There's two stables in town now, CJ said. The closest one to here is Tom Tuttle's. He pointed to a tall man at the end of the bar, talking to two other men. That's Tom right there, the tall feller. You can tell him what you want to do right now. Much obliged. I believe I will. While Pearlie was making arrangements with Tom Tuttle to board the two horses the women rode in on, they were talking with Ed Freeman, the owner of the saloon. "Well, I can't say as how I'm surprised to see you," Freeman remarked. "I told you you'd be coming back here. What happened to that gambler you ran off with? Is he back, too? 'Cause if he is, I've done told him he ain't welcome to run his game here."
"I was always planning to come back to the cattlemen's," Stella lied. "I thought you knew I was just going to Ogallala for a visit." She flashed a wide smile for him. "Charlie ain't coming back. I cut him loose. I don't know where he headed after he left Ogallala, and I don't give a damn. Anyway, I talked Liz here into coming back with me. She was one of the most popular girls working in the Cowboy's Rest, so I knew you'd be tickled if I brought her with me."
Freeman took a long look of appraisal at the sizable woman dressed in men's clothes before he responded to Stella. "What made her so popular? She looks like a mule skinner or a cowhand to me."
"You ain't seen me in my war paint," Liz said, speaking for herself now. "I clean up pretty good. I was robbed of all my clothes, and Stella and me had to run from Indians on the way here. We thought it best to try to make me look like a man from a distance."
Not certain he was hearing the true version of the story, Freeman commented. "You look like a man up close to me."
"When I get cleaned up and in some decent clothes, you'll see a hell of a difference," Liz said. "I've had a lot of men pay good money to jump in bed with me, and I ain't ever had one jump out of the bed."
"She's telling you the truth," Stella said. "You'll see. Liz will sell a lot of whiskey for you." "You're lucky you hit me at the right time," Freeman replied dryly. "Lottie Beale got married last month."
"You don't say," Stella responded, genuinely surprised. "That bashful farmer with one bad eye, I'll bet."
"That's the one," Freeman said.
"See? I knew you needed me and Liz. I'm glad we got here when we did, so we can keep you from losing any business."
"Oh, hell, all right," Freeman gave in, although he was still a little hesitant. "We'll see how it goes for a while, but damn it, you sure better not run off with so much as a kiss my ass like you did before." He took another hard look at Liz. "And get her fixed up in some decent clothes so she at least looks like a woman. Ain't nobody who's in your old room upstairs, so I reckon the two of you can share it." They started to return to the barroom when he thought of something else. "You're gonna have to get along with Cora. She's been the queen around here ever since Lottie Beale got married."
"Oh, I'll set things straight with Cora," Stella said. And when they went out the door, she muttered low to Liz, "I'll kick her ass if she gets snotty with me."
I thought you said he was a friend of yours, Liz said. She was still astonished by the story she had just heard. Stella had never mentioned a gambler named Charlie, or how she happened to land in Ogallala. He was, and he will be again in a day or two, Stella replied confidently. Let's go see how Pearlie's doing. They found Pearlie talking to Tom Tuttle and a couple of other men when they returned to the barroom. When they walked over to join the group, Pearlie said, I was just talking to Mr. Tuttle here about boarding your horses. I reckon that's what you want to do. Before they could answer, Tuttle interrupted. You're Stella, ain't you? She smiled and nodded. I thought you looked familiar when you walked in a few minutes ago. You've been away a while. Least I ain't seen you in here for a spell. Who's this fellow with you? Pearlie saw Liz wince and immediately felt her embarrassment. That's Liz MacDonald, he was quick to respond. She's just dressed up like a man. She don't look half that bad when she's dressed up like a woman. As soon as he said it, he knew it didn't sound right. What I mean is... That was as far as he got before Liz interrupted. I swear, Pearlie, you do have a way with words, she said, unable to keep from laughing. I reckon the first place I need to go is to the store to get me some clothes. Then a good soaking in a tub of hot water and a fresh coat of paint, and I'll show you my better self. Ma'am, I didn't mean no disrespect, Tuttle started to apologize. Never you mind, Liz said, before he went any further. I'm a whore, and have been since I was 14. It ain't the first time I've been insulted. Now, you say Pearlie and you were talking about our horses? Before they left the bar, Liz had arranged a deal wherein Tuttle would buy the women's horses and saddles, despite the fact that Tuttle had not inspected either horse at that point. He agreed to meet Pearlie at the stable to take possession of the two horses as soon as he finished his drink with his two friends. I'll go ahead and bring the horses soon as Liz and Stella get anything they've left in the saddlebags, and I'll wait for you down there, Pearlie said. Liz and Stella walked out to the hitching rail with him, and he waited while they got the few things they had bought at Duck Bend, which wasn't much. What are you going to do after you take the horses to the stable? Liz asked. I don't know, Pearlie answered. Maybe find something to eat somewhere. Then I'll make camp down along the creek close to town, he said, referring to Crow Creek. Reckon I'll head out to Denver in the morning. If I'm lucky, maybe I'll cut my grandpa's trail somewhere down in Colorado territory. I figure we owe you a good supper, Liz said, and looked at Stella to receive her nod of agreement. I know we owe you a hell of a lot more than that for what you did for us. I don't know if we'd have made it without you. That's mighty nice of you to say that, he replied. But you don't owe me anything. I'm glad I happened along when I did. I'm gonna miss you, Pearlie Gates, Stella said, then caught herself before she got downright emotional. You get through at the stables and come on back here. Liz and I will take you to supper at the diner next to Dyer's Hotel. There's a woman runs that place that's a hell of a cook. Might as well start you off to Denver with a solid meal in your belly. We'll either be in the saloon or upstairs. First room on the right when you get back. All right, if you insist, Pearlie said. I can't pass up a good supper. Chapter 9 Sorry to keep you waiting. Pearlie, was it? Tom Tuttle said when he approached him standing at the hitching rail before the stable. Pearlie had separated the horses, with Buck and his pack horse at one end of the rail, and the flea-bitten gray and three Indian ponies at the other. I buy a lot of hay from those two fellas you saw me with, so they wanted to buy me a drink, Tuttle said. I ain't in a hurry, Pearlie said. There's the two horses you bought, those two with the saddles on them. One of 'em's an Indian pony, the other one's the gray you see there. I was listening to the trade you were making with Liz, and I thought you were mighty generous with your offer. But I wouldn't be honest if I didn't tell you that gray ain't got many days left in him. The Indian pony's a pretty good horse, but you gave more than that gray's worth. So if it's all the same to you, I'll throw in those other two Indian ponies, so you don't get skunked on the deal." His offer astonished Tuttle. "Well, that's mighty decent of you. Did those two belong to the women, too?" "Well, no, sir. Those two belonged to me. I was aiming to sell 'em if I could, since I ain't got no use for 'em. But I think it would be only right to turn 'em over to you to make the deal a fair one." Tuttle was more than a little confused. He wasn't sure he was hearing Pearlie correctly. "Are you connected to those women in any way? Married to one of 'em or something?" Pearlie chuckled. "No, sir. I just met 'em a few days ago, and they were stranded back this side of Ogallala. Fellow they hired to take 'em here ran off with their pack horse. So I rode to Cheyenne with 'em. They're whores, but they're nice folks once you get to know 'em. You seem like a reasonable fellow, so I didn't like to see you get skunked with a lame horse." Tuttle looked as if he didn't know what to say. Pearlie continued, "And I'd like to give you a little business to boot. I told the women I'd let 'em buy my supper, so I'd like to leave my bay and my pack horse here till morning." "Pearlie, that's the damnedest thing I ever heard, and I appreciate your honesty." He thought about it for a moment, then made an offer. "Tell you what, why don't I give you $30 for the two extra horses, so you don't lose out on everything? And I won't charge you to board your other horses for the night, or you either, if you want to sleep with them. How's that?" "That's fair enough," Pearlie said. "I appreciate it. I hope you don't think Liz was trying to skunk you. Fact of the matter is, I don't think she knows enough about horses to tell if one is young or old or stout or frail." "I think you're right," Tuttle said as he took a look in the gray's mouth. "I've got to be more careful when I do any trading with women." When Pearlie started to walk away, Tuttle said, "I lock the barn and the stable at 7 o'clock. "I'll be back before then," Pearlie assured him, then headed for the saloon. When he got to the cattleman's, he didn't see Liz or Stella anywhere in the room, so he walked up to the bar. "Howdy, Pearlie," C.J. sang out. "Stella said to tell you she and the other woman are upstairs, top of the steps, first room on the left." "Much obliged," Pearlie said, and turned toward the stairs. C.J. said first room on the left, but Pearlie was sure he remembered Stella saying first room on the right. He decided Stella most likely knew which room she had used when she lived there before, so when he reached the top he went to the door on the right and rapped lightly. There was no response to his knocking. He waited a few seconds and rapped again. Still no response. Obviously it was an empty room, and C.J. was right. Stella's room must be on the left. Pearlie decided to look inside anyway, just to be sure, so he turned the knob and found the door unlocked. Since it was open, he walked on inside, thinking maybe it was Stella's room after all, and they had gone to the kitchen or maybe the outhouse. The room was dark, so just to make sure he wasn't catching them by surprise, he sang out cheerfully, "Everybody decent?" He was not prepared for the picture he saw when his eyes adjusted to the darkness in the room. "What the hell?" The voice of an irate man erupted, obviously in the midst of a contract with the equally irate woman in bed with him. "Get the hell out of here!" Cora Burke yelled. Another cow pie was the thought that flashed through Pearlie's mind, and in a matter of seconds he found himself confronted by what he considered at that moment to be the biggest human being he had ever seen. "Pardon the interruption, folks. My mistake. Wrong room. Just carry on with your activities. I'll let myself out." He backed hurriedly toward the door, only to be followed by the enraged beast. "I don't blame you one bit for being irritated," Pearlie said in an attempt to calm the man. "I apologize 100%, and I'll let you get back to your business." Evidently, he had intruded at precisely the wrong moment, for the giant he could see now clearly, since the man had followed him into the hallway, showed no tendency to forgive. Cora's encouragement from inside the room didn't help the matter. "Kick his ass, Brady!" she yelled. "There ain't really no need for that," Pearlie said, thinking to calm the brute. "I made a mistake, and I said I'm sorry. So let's let that be the end of it, and I'll be on my way." Brady's response was an evil smile on his broad face. "I don't want to keep you out here in the hall without your clothes on," Pearlie continued. "You might catch pneumonia or something, with no more than that little towel wrapped around you." "I'm fixin' to break your back for you," Brady threatened, his voice a low growl. "Come bustin' in the room like that? I paid Cora for the whole night, and she ain't cheap."
"Kick his ass, Brady!" Cora repeated, her voice resembling the screech of a buzzard fighting over a corpse.
"She sounds charming," Pearlie couldn't resist commenting, "so I'll let you get back to her now." Behind him, he heard doors opening as sounds of the altercation were transmitted down the hall. One of them was directly opposite the room he had mistakenly entered, and he heard a familiar voice.
"Pearlie, what's going on?"
"I walked into the wrong room and interrupted this fellow, and now he's wanting to break my back, so he says," Pearlie answered, while maneuvering warily, anticipating the big man's charge.
"He don't look like he's dressed for a fight," Liz said as she walked out to join Stella in the hallway. She took a moment to evaluate the situation, then stepped forward and grabbed the towel knotted around Brady's massive waist. With one quick jerk of the knot, she pulled the towel away, causing a chorus of snickering from the small audience that had come out into the hall to watch. Shocked, the embarrassed brute tried to cover himself with his hands and fled back into the room to escape his humiliation. Liz popped him on his rear with the towel just as he disappeared through the doorway. The door slammed shut behind him.
"I'll leave the towel on your doorknob in case you want to come out again," Liz yelled. Then she looked at Stella. "You ready? Let's get the hell out of here before he gets his clothes on."
"I'm ready," Stella replied, still giggling. She grabbed Pearlie by the elbow. "Sorry, Pearlie. I'm always mixing up right with left. Come on, let's go eat supper."
He hurried down the stairs with the two women, running from a savage attack once again, just like their ride from Ogallala. Only this time, they were all laughing.
"What was all the fuss upstairs?" CJ asked when they passed by the bar on their way out.
"Nothing much," Stella answered. "Just Cora and one of her gentleman friends. If anybody wants us, we'll be at the dining room in the Inter-Ocean Hotel."
Once outside, they turned in the opposite direction and headed to Katie's Diner, next to Dyer's Hotel.
"Say howdy to Katie Taylor and her cook, Myra Long," Stella said when they walked into the diner.
"I declare, gal, where in the world have you been?" Katie asked Stella. "I thought you must have found one of Myra's fingernails in the stew and started eating at that fancy dining room at the hotel."
"Nope," Stella answered. "I've been out of town for a spell. Got to missing your cooking so bad I had to come back to Cheyenne."
"I see you brought a couple of friends with you," Katie said. "And who's this handsome young feller?"
Stella introduced Pearlie and Liz.
"I told them how good the cooking is here, so don't go and make a liar out of me."
"We'll just let them decide that for themselves," Katie said.
"I'm mighty pleased you dropped in," she said to Liz and Pearlie. "Everybody drinking coffee?"
When she received three affirmative nods, she went to the coffee pot on the stove in the back of the room.
"I guess she doesn't mind serving prostitutes," Liz commented when Katie was out of earshot. "Or does she not know you're a working girl?"
They were not welcome in the two diners in Ogallala.
"Hell, if it wasn't for the business she gets from whores, she wouldn't make it," Stella said.
"She don't tolerate bad behavior from whores or anybody else. She'll ask you to leave quick enough if you don't behave yourself, and if asking ain't enough, Myra limbers up her shotgun."
Katie returned with their coffee and placed the cups around. "This young feller must be a big spender," she said.
He's buying your supper? Ain't many of your customers that'll spring for supper, too. Stella laughed. He ain't buying our supper. I'm buying his, and he ain't a customer. He's a friend, and a damn good one.
Katie raised her eyebrows at that.
Well, I beg your pardon, young man.
I didn't know there was any such thing as a damn good man.
Sounds like you've run into too many of the other kind, Pearlie said.
You can say that for a fact, Katie replied. Now what you gonna have? I've got beef stew or bean soup, or a little of both if you want it.
Stew was the unanimous choice, so Katie yelled the order out to Myra in the kitchen. The cooking was good, just as Stella had promised, and had it not been for the four biscuits Pearlie polished off, he might have ordered seconds on the stew.
"It's a little better eaten than we've had for the last 4 days, ain't it?" Stella commented.
"I reckon this is the last time we'll break bread together, and I want you to know how much I appreciate your taking your time to make sure me and Liz got here alive."
"That goes for me, too," Liz said. "You're a good man, Pearlie. I hope you find your grandpappy."
Pearlie was touched by their words, and more than a little embarrassed. He found himself feeling guilty again for having wished he had not been so unlucky as to have run into them on the South Platte. He decided at that moment that he was now glad that he had met the two women. The feeling was not long-lasting, extending only past the fried apple pie, when the door of the diner was suddenly filled with the bulk of Brady Ennis. He said nothing for a long moment while he looked the room over, trying to recall what the man who had walked in on him looked like. His vision may not have been as sharp as it normally would be, due to the amount of whiskey he had imbibed during his search. There were not that many people in the diner, so his gaze kept returning to the table where a man and two women sat. A slow smile began to form on the broad, hairy face as he settled on the two women and decided one of them, the one wearing men's clothes, was the one who had jerked the towel from him. So that meant the man sitting at the table was the man who had walked into the room and caused all the trouble. Brady stood there, grinning with the anticipation of exacting his revenge and taking his time about it. He ducked his head to keep from bumping it on the lintel and walked over to stand in front of the man and the two women, all of whom were staring at him in total shock. Even Liz was not prone to move.
"I've been looking for the three of you. You ran out of the cattleman's before I had a chance to get my clothes on. Been looking all up and down the street for you."
His eyes locked on Pearlie's.
"I promised to give you something."
"A broken back?" Pearlie guessed. "But there's no need to trouble yourself. I won't hold you to it." He gestured toward Liz and Stella. "We've forgotten all about it, so you might as well, too. Have yourself a slice of this pie and a cup of coffee. That'll make you feel better." Brady, confused for a moment, couldn't believe what he was hearing.
"Are you trying to make a fool out of me?"
"No, sir. I'm a little late for that job," Pearlie replied. "I'm just trying to keep you from making a bigger fool out of yourself. Everybody in the cattleman's is laughing at how you were running around the hall upstairs buck naked. Pretty soon that's going to be all over town. I'd think you wouldn't want to hang around for that. But hell, I ain't saying I know what's best for you."
"What's it going to be?" Brady demanded, his patience exhausted. "Knives? Guns? Bare hands? Are you going to fight or not?"
"Well, given a choice and being a sensible man, I'd ordinarily say I'd rather not. But if you're telling me I've got to pick, then I pick guns for me and bare hands for you. And I think it's mighty damn sporting of you to offer that choice. Now, when do you want to have this contest? Next Thursday is good for me. How's your schedule?" Confused and unable to believe the prattle coming from the man sitting at the table, Brady seemed stunned for a few long moments. Then his face and neck appeared to glow red beneath his beard as the frustration progressed to a state of uncontrolled rage, until it finally erupted like an explosion of dynamite, and he dived across the table at Pearlie. Stella and Liz screamed as the table collapsed under the weight of the brute, and they scrambled to escape the assault. Pearlie went backward, but unlike the women, he had counted on an insane attack, figuring that was most likely his only chance against the monster. While Brady was still in mid-air over the table, Pearlie had taken a firm grip on the handle of the heavy iron skillet that held half of a fried apple pie, which he later learned to be a favorite with Katie's customers. The heavy skillet sounded a dull thud when it bounced off Brady's skull on the first blow. The second seemed more like the clang of a bell. It was difficult to guess which one was the strike that knocked the beast senseless to lie sprawled on the broken table. The room was dead silent, as the few customers to have witnessed the attack were speechless. Katie and Myra, holding her shotgun, were just as stunned as they watched Pearlie knock Brady cold. "Have you got any rope?" he asked Katie. She shook her head. "We've got a spool of clothesline," Myra volunteered. "That'll do," Pearlie said, and she went immediately to fetch it. Brady had not stirred when she returned with the clothesline. Pearlie took it from her, pulled Brady's arms behind his back, and tied his wrists. Then he tied his ankles, and while he worked, he asked a young man, one of the diners, to go and fetch the sheriff. "Is he dead?" Liz wondered aloud. "No, I don't think so," Pearlie replied. "But he's going to have a hell of a headache when he does come to." "Well, I hope you tied him real good," Stella said, "'cause he's going to be madder'n hell when he does." "I expect so," Pearlie agreed. He turned, talking to all the spectators in the place. "You all saw what happened. He came in here after me. I tried to talk him to sitting down and having some pie and coffee, but he insisted on attacking me. All I did was try to defend myself." He wanted to make sure they all saw the same thing for when the sheriff got there. "Ain't no doubt about that," Katie said. "I think everybody agrees on that." In a little while, the young man returned with the deputy, the sheriff having already gone home for supper. The deputy, a no-nonsense individual named Bill Snipe, stood for a long moment over the prostrate body draped across the tabletop before he questioned Kate. "What is that? Is that his brain spilling out of his head?" "No," Katie answered. "Them's fried apples." "Oh," Snipe said. "Then he ain't dead." To confirm it, Brady stirred as he began to come back from his sudden nap, growling drunkenly about killing someone. It was not hard to guess who started the trouble. "Brady Ennis," Snipe said with a generous measure of disgust. "You ain't been in town 2 whole days yet, and I've already had 6 complaints about you. I think a little time in jail is going to be the cure for what ails you." He untied Brady's ankles so he could walk, and with Pearlie's help he got the huge man on his feet. Although groggy and unsteady when he stood up, Brady tried to resist when Snipe pushed him toward the door. Snipe drew his .44 and threatened him. "I ain't got time to fool with you, Ennis. I'm going to fetch you another rap on the head if you don't start walking." He held the pistol up, ready to deliver another blow to Brady's skull. It was enough to convince the huge man that he couldn't risk taking another one. "Pearlie Gates," Brady mumbled as he stumbled out the door. "I ain't gonna forget that name."
"Pearlie Gates?" Bill Snipe echoed and looked at Pearlie. "Is that you?"
"Afraid so," Pearlie answered.
"You figuring on being in town a while?" Snipe asked.
"Nope. Hadn't planned on it. Figured I'd be leaving in the morning."
"Good," Snipe said. "'Cause I won't hold Brady more than 2 days. That's about as long as we hold anybody for fighting when nobody gets shot."
With Brady out the door, Pearlie turned to help the women clean up the mess Brady had caused. "I'm real sorry about the damage," he said to Katie as he rolled the tabletop out of their way. "Top's okay, but the legs are broke down pretty bad. I reckon I owe you for the cost of fixing them." Sorry about the pie, too. I'll pay for that, too. Shame to see it go to waste, though. He pointed to a fair-sized piece of it on the floor next to the wall. There's a piece that could be salvaged. Katie.